Hi there. Welcome to another episode of the Customer-Led Groove Show, where we discuss and share the best practices and the latest trends in customer marketing, advocacy, and customer-led growth. Today's episode is brought to you by BASE, a pioneer in B2B marketing and the industry's first CLG ecosystem for customer-led marketers, sales, and product professionals. Okay, let's welcome the CLG team and today's guests.
Hi there, Scott Wilder here, and welcome to another episode of Customer-Led Groove, orchestrated by BASE and part of the CLG campus. Today you have two Scotts. I'm here with Scott Brinker from HubSpot. I'm sure a lot of you know Scott Brinker, editor of chiefmartech.com, VP of platform ecosystems at HubSpot. And Scott, welcome.
Yeah, wow, the Scott Squared Show, awesome.
That's right.
Good to
That's
be right. here with you.
Two Scotts in 1 hour. Wow. Actually, in 20 minutes. But so today, we really wanted to talk about a few things. We want to talk about the marketing stack. We have a lot of folks who are part of the CLG campus who are trying to figure out, as they go into the new year, how to think about their marketing stacks, how to be more efficient, et cetera. We also have some CMOs now who are also trying to think from a strategic perspective about where they put their dollars and how they get their returns. And then we'll also talk about the ecosystem. And I'm sure we'll hit a lot of other good topics as well. So why don't we start out with, I usually ask people to say what their journey is, but I'm going to skip that today because I'm sure you've done that 1,000 times. But I think it'd be really good to start out about, here you are working at HubSpot, advising not just HubSpot, but other companies about how to think about their marketing stack and their ecosystems. But let's just start with the marketing stack. How would you approach that? You're talking to a CMO and they come to you and say, Scott, I got all these different technologies. How do I become more efficient?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge a lot of companies are wrestling with. Any listener who feels like, oh my goodness, my tech stack is a mess. You're not alone. There's kind of two different dimensions to how you solve this. One is from a technical level and one is from a people, process level. From the technology level, the focus really has to be around integration. The MarTech landscape was kind of weird, unusual in this way that there was this explosion of thousands and thousands of companies before everyone really gave serious thought to how would you get these things to actually all work together? And sort of been after the fact that everyone's like, oh yeah, maybe we should have figured that out. So it's a little bit of extra work. It's taken longer to retroactively, start to have all these, the larger platforms in the marketing tech ecosystem really make sure they've opened up their APIs, make sure that they're working with, these partners to do as much of this integration work behind the scenes. Any developer of an app, any developer of a platform, we collectively should be able to do a lot of the hard work on connecting the wires so that, our customers don't have to think about that. So I would say first and foremost, when you're looking at your tech stack and you're sort of evaluating what do you keep, what do you get rid of, what might you consider adding in the future? I think just making sure that you're evaluating the integration capabilities of the particular products as one of the dimensions along with cost and features, just to make sure that, you're starting to bring a little bit more cohesion to how these pieces come together.
That's great. So you said there's the technology side and there's the people side. Maybe you can talk a little bit about the people side.
Yes. So this is the thing that's the irony of MarTech sometimes people get really, really excited about the technology. I'm guilty of this myself. I'm definitely fascinated by the innovation. But what was it? Avinash Kaushik, who's one of the early, advocates in, analytics, digital marketing, used to have this rule where it was like, listen, invest 10% in the tool and 90% in the people. And that stuck with me because I feel that's true today, and unfortunately, it's all too easy for companies to sort of overlook the investment they need to do in you know, like onboarding their teams, but not just onboarding, you know, training, giving them the opportunity to experiment, like helping them engage with peers, both inside the company, but also with, you know, like peer networks, you know, beyond their company to, you know, really go through this process of developing the skills and experience with these tools. I mean, I can't tell you how many tools, you know, I've seen. I'm sure you've seen a number of these too, you know, where a company buys it, you know, and they spend all this money on it, but it never really gets adoption, or that the use cases they're applying it to, like they get a couple out of the box and then they never really, you know, go beyond that. And that's just, I think that's, well, it's obviously a huge waste, but it's also where I think a lot of the frustration then rises, because people are like, well, we have all this technology, but what exactly is it doing for us? And you're like, well, you know, you kind of just putting it on the credit card was not sufficient for actually harnessing the value of this.
Yeah. So you mentioned Avinash. He and I worked together at Intuit, and he was really instrumental in putting a lot of the analytics systems in place. On the people side, there's some things that really resonate with me, you know, that I think as I call us vendors or as technology companies, you know, we're really focused on the onboarding of our customer because we're customer first. But I think there's a huge opportunity to help our customer or our point of contact in the company educate the whole company about the technology, right? You know, we talk about cross-functional work and all that. But, you know, I've been guilty, you know, in terms of all, you know, a lot of the technology companies I've worked in where I've just focused on the admin or the end user, right? But we need to make them stars, not only amongst their peers, but also inside the company.
Yeah. And it's a ton of work. You know, even when the technology is relatively easy to use, it's still, it's helping people understand like new kinds of use cases or new ways of doing things. I mean, I don't know. I'm finding myself backing into a corner of like, hey, there should be this whole profession and, you know, movement around change management, because that's probably a big deal. And well, it's actually there is. So some things remain true.
Yeah.
Even in MarTech.
Yeah. No, I like that idea. Just taking a change management approach to getting, you know, not only your customer, but also the internal folks on board. I think, you know, one of the challenges that I've talked about here and other shows is that we're all siloed in our metrics, right? So the problem is, you know, Scott Wilder's in Group A and he's saying he's got this engagement number. And then somebody in Group B is saying they have this engagement number. We're all using different tools. We're all measuring engagement. And we're all talking about the same customers, basically, right? In terms of looking at those engagement numbers. So I find that is kind of, you know, just that's kind of been a personal frustration of mine in the past and in these big companies.
Yeah. And it's not just that like people use different metrics in different teams. What's fascinating is very often because, you know, companies get aligned on, you know, sort of high level strategies, you know, but then they have like, oh, well, what's the definition of the metric we're going to use to see are we making progress in that strategy? And then you'll see different groups like slightly redefine like what the metric is in their context, but they're using the same label and the same name, you know, and it's like this sort of Tower of Babel scenario. I mean, in the whole data ops world, right? Like this idea of metadata and data catalogs and all this, it's a huge deal. And the reason it's a huge deal is, again, it's not so much a technical challenge, it's just the work involving in like curating and standardizing, you know, definitions, it's hard, but boy, it's important. Cause if you don't, yeah, we're speaking different languages and sometimes we don't even realize it.
So, you know, you're infamous for the MarTech landscape. And I call it mitosis. Every time I look at it, it seems to be growing more and more. I'm just curious, you know, based on what you've seen over time, what have been some of the trends in terms of the landscape? You know, where do you see things growing or changing, et cetera?
Yeah. Well, one of the things I always, you know, have to feel like I just should disclaim is, you know, when people see this and it keeps growing, it feels very counterintuitive because like, you know, when we read the headlines and, you know, TechCrunch or the news or other places, like, oh, well, all these companies are buying these other companies and the industry is consolidating. So if it keeps consolidating, how does it keep growing? This is some sort of mathematical impossibility. You know, and hey, that consolidation is absolutely happening. And if you were to look at the landscape not just by a collection of logos, but if you were to look at it as a distribution of market share and revenue, you would absolutely see it as this long tail with the head of the tail being a very consolidated, structure. But the thing is, it's just there are no barriers to software startups anymore. And people keep coming up with new ideas. And, you know, as customer expectations change, as new channels change, as new kinds of emerging technologies make different kinds of things possible. I mean, we're seeing this right now with generative AI. You know, just when we thought content management and content creation was like, oh, yeah, well, this field seems relatively stable and, consolidating. And then you're like, oh, yeah, no, everything's up for grabs here. It's what makes the MarTech space, I would say, interesting, but other people might use a less flattering adjective for it, is it is a just a continuous change, a continuous, I don't know, like primordial soup of like ongoing evolution.
So you're going to add the generative AI category to the landscape?
You know, it's funny. If you'd asked me that 6 months or so ago, that might have been my initial reaction. But I'm now realizing the more vendors I talk to who are doing stuff with this, it's not going to be a category so much as it's going to be a capability that gets embedded in like a whole bunch of tools across all different, which is kind of what happened with, you know, like the machine learning side of AI. You know, the reason I don't have a category for it is because like, boy, you're kind of hard pressed to find a significant tool in the MarTech landscape that isn't using some machine learning somewhere under the covers.
I think that's really interesting. Yeah. And that's not, I totally agree with you, but if you asked me an hour ago, I probably would have had a different thought. I mean, it's really interesting. Yeah. It is kind of infiltrating or becoming part or being sprinkled into all these different, you know, areas. So I have to ask about ChatGPT. It's such a hot topic. And, I was just reading this. And the other reason I want to ask is because you are a content creator, right? So as a content creator, you know, it's also on your radar from that perspective, not just from a marketing perspective. But I was reading this morning about CNET getting caught for using AI for creating their content. So, you know, as you look into your crystal ball, or, you know, how should people think about, you know, ChatGPT and, you know, what do you think might be coming up down the road?
Yeah. I'm definitely in the camp. ChatGPT is really kind of mind blowing, you know? I mean, now again, like when you start to really dig into it, you know, you realize very quickly there's a difference between ChatGPT actually knowing things or figuring things out and really ChatGPT just being a very sophisticated way of like echoing back to us, you know, things that it's, you know, summarized, you know, from out there in the world, which again, don't get me wrong, but, you know, summarizing anything you want from anywhere else in the world. It's a really powerful capability. The fact that it isn't actually, you know, it's not like creating, you know, net new, concepts. It's not, you know, taking any sort of like really deep analytical approach to how things are related is, I think, you know, at least for now, we'll see what happens general artificial intelligence eventually gets here and Skynet and all that. Probably not only out of a job, probably, you know, hiding in a hole somewhere. At least for now, I think folks who bring an expertise to a particular topic, and it's not a static expertise, it's something that they're continually like pushing the frontier of, I don't think they have to worry so much about things like ChatGPT, infringing on, their contributions. But I think those who are one or two steps removed from that, you know, and like seeing that, you know, I mean, you can see like a whole bunch of things they report that are essentially just news or sort of summarizations of things like, ChatGPT probably does a pretty good job of.
Yeah. No, I like the point about if you've done Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours in a topic and you're really dedicated to that topic, then you can stay ahead of the ChatGPT curve, so to speak, and keep providing, you know, real insights. You know, one of the things I've been doing is I've added a Chrome extension to my Google search. And so when I search on something, I actually see the Google search results plus the results for ChatGPT. And it's really interesting. I call it the Wilder Shootout. And love just that. A use case the other day is somebody on LinkedIn who I kind of know, you know, is one of my close 17,000 friends. I don't really know him that well, but he said that he got this new job as the SVP of marketing and sales excellence. I had no idea what that was, and after 20 some odd years in the industry. So I said to him, can you explain it to me? And then I said, well, let me put it into Google. So Google gave me a bunch of links, and then my Chrome extension, ChatGPT, gave me a description of what it was. So I sent it to that guy and I said, is this what you do? And he said, this is exactly what I do. Wow. So that was a really interesting use case for me to learn quickly. I think it's going to be the next 6 months going to be really interesting in terms of how content AI gets, sprinkled into our daily activities. But as you pointed out, we're already using it when we do marketing automation, when we do sales automation and other things.
Yeah. The thing I get most excited about is I feel like, the thing we've been reaching for in marketing for, well, I don't know, depending on where you want to draw the starting line, anywhere from 25 years of the internet, to 40, 50 years of direct mail marketing, is this whole idea of personalization. And even after all the innovations that have happened, you have to admit, most personalization, still today has been all right, it's just a step or two beyond mail merge. It's we'll substitute this thing here.
Exactly.
We have a few possible choices we could pull in. I guess we'll pull this one instead of that one. The thing about ChatGPT and those sorts of models is now you can feed them all this information and it can actually synthesize a cohesive, personalized message. It's this inflection point where all of a sudden, the dream that people always had of personalization that we never quite hit, all of a sudden it's I think we're going to hit it here within the next 12 months using this technology, and pretty wild.
I'm going to ask you a question to help me with a future podcast. I have to talk about the future of content or where content is today. And I think a lot of content folks are going to be content, what I'm calling their packaging of content, right? So they're aggregating, they're curating, and then they're also figuring out how AI plays into this. And I think that's going to be a really big trend because you can create the content, but there's just so many sources. And being transparent, that's kind of what I'm trying to do on the CLG campus is I'm just a librarian. I'm an aggregator and curator and a packager.
Well, I think, I feel like there's a lot, that if you're investing in this, you can still do. Again, part of it is, ChatGPT, it does nice is creating these summary, text, articles, if you will. But for instance, one of the things, when I write my articles, I'm always trying to put together some visualizations to help explain okay, well, what's the relate? Cause I'm a visual thinker. I prefer to, if you show it to me in an illustration, I get it more than just reading text. And, a lot of audiences, share that. And so, yeah, ChatGPT and that technology isn't yet at a point where it's going to do that for you. So people who are creating not just some text, but hey, this is a whole presentation to help you understand. We like to consume this stuff in different ways. So even what we're doing now, having human beings, talking about these things and providing some back and forth and nuance, that content is still, going to be, untouched and original here for a while. When you talk about more of content in the context of demand generation, sales enablement, optimizing that funnel, where I think things are going to get really exciting is, again, this sort of marrying between the generative AI capabilities, but feeding into that the wealth of customer data, behavioral data, so that we can actually get much, much better at targeting the right content to the right person at the right time. Again, we've been saying we want to do that for 25 years, but hey, actually, we're on the precipice of really being able to do it at a totally different level.
Yeah. I mean, I really hope that happens. It's amazing to me how many websites I go to or how many apps I go to. And, I'm just person 001, It's kind of, There's a program, a TV program called Person of Interest, and they track down people based on their number. It's a great show, but yeah, I mean, it's funny because the Google Ads and AdWords will do a good job a decent job targeting me based on where I've been or previous interests. But then I go to the website and I'm not Scott. I'm not. I'm just a number. I want to talk a little bit about ecosystems, you know, being transparent. We talk a lot about customer-led growth, but I think there's people like Alan Adler and others are really onto this ecosystem-led growth and how it's, you know, it's a number of different types of people that are involved in transactions, whatever. And it seems like a lot of this is starting from, at least the ecosystem approach is starting from the partner universe. And so I just want to kind of get your sense of how you think about, you know, the ecosystem-led growth or ecosystems in general.
Yeah, I think it's been a huge shift in strategic thinking, you know, for a lot of businesses. It's recognition, like, in, you know, for the entire history of business, we've had this concept of partnerships. But so many partnerships were always thought of as these, you know, point-to-point, you know, interactions. Oh, it's me and this particular partner and what we specifically do, you know, and what you're seeing. I mean, certainly the, you know, the explosion of the digital world where suddenly everything becomes adjacent to everything else, you know, really helped to create a sea change in even what was possible, you know, but what you see now is around any given company and the customers they serve, there are all these other companies who also serve those customers and a number that are related in some way, either, you know, directly or just one or two steps indirectly, you know, to what that company does. And for the customers, right, they're like orchestrating with a series of these folks, you know, and I think ecosystem strategy and ecosystem, real leadership, you know, of a business is recognizing all these different kinds of companies that are serving your customer. And how do you start to really intentionally develop the relationships, you know, beyond the immediate, you know, like obvious partnerships, like that next wave out. And then there's sort of one more step beyond that, which is it's not just your relationship with those different kinds of partners. It's the relationships those different kinds of partners have with each other. Mm-hmm. And to the degree that you can help facilitate, you know, the synergies here, this sort of web of alliances, to just get more effective in serving the same customer, you know, when they fall into, you know, the space where you're overlapping. So I'm sort of making this really abstract, but right, like, you know, for like, you know, someone buying software from a platform company like HubSpot, well, I mean, they might have, you know, different app integration partners that they connect with from a tech perspective. They might, you know, have a different agency they're using for, you know, like their advertising management. They might have a consultancy they're using for like implementing their tech stack. They might have another group they're using for like, you know, training, you know, that sort of people enablement side we're talking. And like all of these like actually need to work together well in order for that customer to truly be successful, you know, with this total adoption. And so when you start looking at it through that lens and trying to orchestrate it that way, I mean, it's an incredibly powerful model for business, and it's still quite new for a lot of businesses. But I think, yeah, I'd agree with you and Alan Adler, and you know, this sort of ties into your championing of community led growth is like, I mean, communities are part of your ecosystem too. Your ecosystem should be part of your community. It sort of blurs the line between those.
Yeah, when I was at Intuit, I always tell Intuit stories on here because Intuit is it affected my DNA probably more than any other company I've worked at. It was really interesting. So when I launched Community in the early 2000s, I kind of stumbled into something where Intuit's ecosystem is set up where accountants are like the key promoters, right? So Intuit's strategy is you get more accountants on board and they're going to tell their small businesses to use their product, et cetera. And then accountants use other tools. So they got partners involved. So when I first created the community, I'd love to say I planned it. I leaned heavily into the accountants and got them involved first. And then they told their companies and so on. And so this kind of organic ecosystem kind of formed. And I've been just taking that playbook around the world with me. So, you know, when I was at Google, it was the same thing. Instead of accountants, it was AdWords consultants, AdWords, small AdWords agencies, you know, because there's a zillion of them in the Google world. And so I think that was, you know, from a community perspective, community-led growth is key. But I lean, it's funny because I'm a community person at heart, but I think the ecosystem approach really resonates with me more because it is the people aspect.
Yeah. And again, they're very complementary to each other. So yeah, it's really exciting. It feels like there, I mean, and certainly you know this with the work you're doing now, there's just so much opportunity for innovation in this space because, you know, it's one thing to, in theory, have these models, but to now, through data and digital connections, have the ability to actually action on these models. Yeah, it's kind of a new frontier. So really exciting.
I know it moves a little bit in the crossbeam space, but I'm curious, do you have any plans for the ecosystem landscape where you can show companies, you know, show companies working together?
Oh, you know, well, yes, that's actually been my dream for like years. There's two challenges there. One is just, yeah, harvesting all that data because it's not quite standardized yet across all these folks. And then the other is like, quite haven't figured out how to visualize that two-dimensionally without going insane. So, but yeah, no, you're exactly right. Because that's really ultimately, I think, what people want to see then, you know, like the more they recognize that, you know, these ecosystems, you know, become a huge value add, you know, and increases their odds, you know, of success and, you know, evaluating which vendors or which, yeah, not even which vendor am I going with, which ecosystem am I going with? And I think helping people to see that and evaluate that, it would be fantastic. It'll happen. If I don't do it, somebody's going to do it. Probably someone smarter than me will figure out a brilliant way to visualize that. I'll be like, yes, that.
So if I'm a CMO or even if I'm in the digital trenches doing the day-to-day work, how should I start to think about my ecosystem? You know, like,
well, I think, you know, as with everything else, and I'm sure this resonates with your mission, it's, you know, it starts with the customer. You know, it's just really understanding for your customers, who else do they work with? How do they get these things done? You know, whether companies come in, which ones are sort of there more permanently, which ones are more transitory, you know, and as you start to really pay attention to that, like so many customer interviews, you know, I mean, you know, it's very easy to stay focused on, oh, for my particular product or service, how are you using this particular product or service? You know, so you have to be a little bit intentional to like expand the aperture a bit, you know, really understand, well, who else are you working with for this? And what's adjacent to this? You know, and I think once you start to map that out, and again, you do this over a series of customer, you know, interviews, you start to see the patterns emerge. And I think that's really helpful because then, you know, you can start to look like, oh, okay, well, with these different patterns, these different pockets, you know, within our ecosystem, where do we have existing relationships? Where are we actively managing this? And is it going well? Is it not going well? You know, how efficient are we in that? But then you probably will find yourself discovering pockets where you're like, oh, yeah, we didn't even actually realize this is a part of our ecosystem, but it has a huge influence, you know, on our customers and their actual success. And so, I don't know, start with the customer and map it out.
Well, that's why we lean into the term customer-led growth. You know, it's funny, like I've been thinking about, you know, writing a book, we work for the customer, so let's make them successful.
I love that title. We work for the customer.
Exactly, exactly. So ask me a year from now if I've done my book. Scott, it's always great interacting with you, talking with you, Zooming with you. I like to ask two last questions. So one is there anything, like, I feel like I could talk to you forever, but is there anything I haven't asked you today? You're like, damn, Wilder, why haven't you asked me?
Ooh, wow. Yeah. I mean, the world is large. I don't know. I always keep coming back to like, you know, there's just so much change happening in the world. I think I always like to remember two things. First of all, you have to embrace change. Like, this is not easy for us as humans, you know, like, yeah, you usually have to like consciously, but we just live in a time of change. And so I think everything you do around how you develop your teams, how you think about your tech stack, you know, even, you know, your longer term strategy, you just want this certain agility and adaptability to be like, you know, a primary factor in how you think about approaching it. But the second thing is, yeah, recognizing that's hard. And you are not alone. It's like, I talk to like every year, you know, hundreds and hundreds of different executives, you know, in marketing and I am yet to talk to one who is like, yep, now we got this all said. We're all under control. No worries here. Smooth sailing. This is a time of great change, and that has its upsides and its downsides. And on the downsides, I guess I just, you know, always like to remind people, like, take a deep breath. You're not the only one wrestling with this. We're not going to get it perfect, but just take it, one step at a time.
I always tell people when they feel like they need a deep breath is just take either a virtual or a real walk around the block. I don't go out much, because I still maybe have some residue of the COVID world or whatever, but I do go walk around the block when, I need a little Zen moment.
It's a good thing to do.
So the last question I want to ask you is, you've been doing MarTech stuff for a while, obviously, but who or what has influenced you the most in terms of your professional career? Who is it? Could be a mentor, could be a leader. What could be a book, an experience?
Yeah, man, there'd be a ton of people to list. I will say there's a book that has been particularly influential for me. It's a book called Anti-Fragile by Nassim Nicholas Taleb, who wrote Fooled by Randomness, Black Swan. And really the core idea of Anti-Fragile is, like, we think about things being fragile that are easily broken, and then we've thought about things that are robust, that resist change, they don't break easily, but robustness isn't really the opposite of fragility. The opposite of fragility would be things that actually get better when they're subjected to shocks and changes. They are not fragile, they are anti-fragile, And it turns out there are things like that. I mean, things like evolutionary patterns, the way in which actually the internet works. There are a whole bunch of these things that are systems that actually get stronger with change. And to me, this is the essence of what makes ecosystems, and probably extended to communities there too, so powerful. Is, once they've got this adaptability from all these different participants who each have freedoms, to solve challenges in different ways and, evolutionarily, approach many different challenges, like, they really can be, like, incredibly, again, not just robust to change, but as changes happen, they tend to adapt faster than companies that are trying to tightly control. And we'll do everything our way. That was a long-winded thing. Anti-Fragile by Nassim Nicholas Taleb.
No, I will definitely check out the book, but that definitely resonates with me because those community leaders who've been the most successful have, they go in there with a game plan, but they also let the community, the ecosystem kind of evolve on its own. And they're going to be these small groups or these pockets, or some people call them tribes, or people with similar interests. And you lean into nurturing them. You don't lean into controlling them. And I think that's really, really important. And like I said, the communities that I've worked with and also community leaders I've worked with have been most successful when they let that organic part kind of evolve.
100%.
Well, Scott, thank you very much today. Really appreciate your time and, Scott and I worked together at HubSpot. I've known you for years, and you inspire a lot of people. And keep on creating those visual representations; those are extremely valuable.
Until ChatGPT finally gets its visual engine, and then I'll retire. Thanks for having me, Scott. I really love chatting with you.
Thank you again, everybody, for joining Customer Led Groove, part of the CLG Campus. And like people say at the end of their podcasts, they usually say you can like us on Google and Amazon and Apple. Instead, what I like to say is listen and then play it forward and share with others. Thank you.
Thank you again for joining Customer Led Groove. Remember, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on the CLG campus. Feel free to rate us, follow us, and leave a comment on any of those platforms. We hope to see you again soon, when we're back in the Customer-Led Groove.